Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi today. Joining me on the other end of the line, just like every Wednesday, Bill Cooksey. Bill! Dude, I'm...
Morning, Rocky. Good morning, everybody.
Your rep just keeps going up and up and up.
Well,
I'm part of a text message, and your name comes up in it, and I don't mess with Bill Cooksey. He's a straight-up killer from the OG. I mean, it's serious when you get labeled killer with an A and OG at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I may have to start dyeing my hair and beard and just get back to, you know, just a straight up killer and leave the OG out. But
I think you ought to get a tattoo, straight up killer, and tattoo it over the OG.
Neck tattoo. That way I can sport it, you know, every time I walk into Max.
Yeah, neck tattoos are absolutely the best.
Absolutely. That way you can just throw a little hint, wear a collared shirt and see just a little ink above it, and people always wonder what's there.
Now, I'll tell you who I just actually hung up the phone with before we jumped on this podcast. One of your old friends. And it was good to talk to him because he's going to be coming up on this podcast sometime in the next month or two. That was Jeff Foles.
Oh, good deal. Good deal.
And Jeff's a great guy. Really great. Really good guy. I know that you and Jeff are friends from way back.
Mm-hmm. Been friends a long time. And you know, Jeff, I've always said he, in his days of really pushing hard in calls, he was the hardest working guy in the business. I have a tremendous amount of respect for his work ethic and for him in general. I mean, he raised a great kid. He built a thriving business. He made his mistakes and paid for them. And I mean, we won't go into that. That's y'all, I'm sure, can talk about some of that. But, I think a lot of old Jeff. He's a good guy. He really is.
He is like a hyped up lab, man.
Oh, absolutely. And I haven't seen him in several years now. But, yeah, back in the day, Avery was very involved in goose calling contests when we first came out with the ground blinds and then the decoys. We had to build our brand up north and out west. And the best way to do that was getting involved in the goose calling world, because at the time it was big and growing. So it put us all over the country by getting that involvement. And I got to really know Jeff and Grounds and Zink. Of course, Zink worked, you know, at Avery too, but, and that's just a start, you know, Scott Trinan and Kelly Powers and John Taylor. And, you know, I'm going to leave out so many people, if I started throwing out names, who were instrumental in the goose calling growth through the first 10 years of the 2000s. And Jeff was right in that mix.
I think one of the most misunderstood parts of waterfowling, especially if you're from the South. If you're from the South and you leave the South and go to the Midwest, to the West Coast, to Canada, one of the things that surprised you is the emphasis put on goose hunting. Because I just grew up duck hunting. Well, not really grew up, but that's always been my focus. We never had any geese around to hunt growing up. A few snow geese here and there, but when you're sitting in the blind with a group of Midwesterners or, you know, in Canada or on the West Coast, a lot of geese, but dude, they won't let a 150, 200 mallards land in the decoys to in the hopes of calling in 10 geese.
Right. And it, you know, a lot of that just stems from the part of the world they're in. I mean, goose season typically lasts longer. They're bigger birds. They work a call. You can do it in dry fields or over water. And historically, you know, as we've discussed, I think before, duck hunting in dry fields was a very limited deal. I mean, it was either extreme cold or if you get far enough north, really taking your time and identifying the spot they want to sit down. So guys goose hunted, especially when you look at the late 90s through the early 2000s, I think a lot of this, and all through the 80s, of course, as our duck limits and seasons kept getting smaller to the point where it 30 ducks in 3 days through a lot of the 80s and early 90s, people turned to other things. Some in the South turned to snow geese. You know, up north, they turned to Canadas to have a season of more than 30 days in length. And that kind of became their world. And that's not even counting the places like Easton, Maryland, or Cairo, Illinois, which gets any Canada geese. But, yeah, those were the goose meccas, kind of. But all over the upper Midwest and the, you know, Pacific Northwest and the East Coast, you know, Canada goose hunting was king for a lot of different reasons.
And I apologize to the East Coast people. I'm sorry. Sorry. Because what is the world champion goose caller in on the East Coast that everybody?
You talking about Sean Mann?
Sean Mann. Sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Great guy. Hello?
I thought I lost you there for a second.
I'm right here.
Yeah. Sean Mann. That's exactly who it is. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize while you were talking about goose hunting. And hey, before we leave that topic of goose hunting real quick and we get back to goose calling and Avery being involved with all the goose calling contest around. I'm just asking. Don't have to have any science or facts to back this up. Look, in the past 40 or 50 years, we've seen a change in the migration of Canada geese. Because, listen, they used to kill migratory Canada geese that on the Mississippi River, well, let's say in the past 70 or 80 years. There's old pictures that I've seen from people of killing migratory Canada geese over on the Mississippi River, north of Vicksburg.
Oh, at Vicksburg, they used to kill them in Louisiana. Canada's migrated all the way down. Of course, that was before agriculture was so prominent, especially grain agriculture in the upper part of the flyway. Even in my lifetime, West Tennessee, especially that Real Foot Lake Isom area and Kentucky Lake, a big goose hunting culture developed. I mean, they were setting up places just to kill Canada geese. And the same can be said of Ballard County, Kentucky, and Cairo, Illinois. And it just seems like from the early to mid-90s on, you could just watch it as every year they stop farther and farther and farther north. To the point now it's central Illinois or above is the only place you have any where you can really count on them getting there. And there are a lot of reasons for it. And some of those reasons are the same things influencing our duck migration changes.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Do you think, look, weather patterns in the past, well, we had a cold, I know what's going to come next when I say this. Well, we had a cold year in 2014, or we had a cold year last year. Well, migration patterns don't change over a short term, something happening short term. It's over a long term. And for the long term, we've had more warm winters than we've had cold winters. You know, farming practices, which I think is probably 1A in all of this, the changes in farming practices.
I would put weather number one. The changes in farming practices are huge, but that combines with weather. I mean, if we were still getting the serious cold fronts coming from the north, and that doesn't mean it has to be 18 degrees in Memphis. It means it has to be cold in St. Louis. It has to be cold in Des Moines. You know, those fronts have to push down, freeze up shallow water. There's all people talk about heated ponds. You don't know what you're talking about. There are some, but they're industrial and they're there by law. They have to be there to deal with some industrial situations up north, but they are a pittance. The Mississippi River almost always has some open water up north. The Missouri River, the Ohio River, there are all these rivers north of the Southern Mississippi Flyway. Pierre, South Dakota, coldest years on record, there will be open water near Pierre, South Dakota. So it's not just cold, snow. If we don't have snow, especially now with, as you said, agricultural changes leaving waste grain all over the ground, why do they need to leave? Why would a duck migrate? It's amazing we get what we do in years like this. And this year, like last year, we got squat for cold fronts in December. And if you
how many times have you said that on this podcast? That early cold front, more early cold fronts we get, the better duck season's going to be.
Right. And yes, we had some nice little cold fronts before. The last cold front I recall that was significant was before duck season. And now at that point, I was loaded, and so were a lot of people I talked to. Arkansas had what were actually very good numbers for prior to duck season. And once season opened, that all changed, and we never got any more real weather. We just got more rain. And now we're staring the winter solstice right in the face. And we will get past the shortest day of the year without another significant cold front, no snow, no ice to amount to anything north of us. And at that point, as days get longer, those ducks don't want to be any further south than they have to be. In December, you can get ducks pushed to you, and you don't have to be on the freeze-thaw line. It can be 300 miles north of you, but if the winds are right and all, you get migrations pushed to you. January, if you aren't on the freeze-thaw line, you got a bunch of stale ducks.
And if there was a 1C, and it goes along with the job that you're doing. Now, man, I hate to go off in this rant. I don't know how many times we've talked about this and covered, giving you factual information to back all this up, but the loss of habitat.
Oh, absolutely. And there we're dealing mostly, at least in this conversation, because we're talking mostly the Mississippi Flyway, but the same can be said for the Atlantic Flyway and even parts of the Central Flyway with a lot of the marshes in Texas being in peril from just urban sprawl and people needing water that used to go to marsh. But, you know, with Louisiana, the experts right now tell me this is all-encompassing. All across the state, they've lost 40% of their ability to host ducks. In a nutshell, that's what you're dealing with. And then you get years like this and last year and the year before. There's no good early weather to push anything down but photo migrators. But what you get in September and October and even a little bit of November, it's pretty much it. And you can only hold 60% of what you can hold 25 years ago. And that's from marsh loss, like we deal with at Vanishing Paradise. It's from changing farming practices down there. So it's a huge deal in that part of the Mississippi Flyway. And then up here, farther north, in the good areas for ducks, we were talking about it this morning on Duck South, a few of us posting, there's been a huge increase in the number of places flooding for ducks. Not everywhere, but in the good areas. Like where I hunted there in 1998, and I hunt there today. In 98, there were days we didn't hear anybody shoot within 3 miles of us. Now we're surrounded. And that's changed everything to the point that to alleviate pressure, we're now not hunting for 4 days every week. Other than holidays, that sort of thing, we just take the pressure off. And we at least, by doing that, hold some ducks and get a few good days every week.
I'm not saying that that's nuts in a bad way. I'm saying that's nuts in a good way, that it will only take that little bit of pressure.
Yeah.
Because I agree with you. I think that pressure is one, pressure may actually be in the Mississippi Flyway, especially, I was talking to a guy in Missouri yesterday. Pressure may be 1A or 1B there.
Especially on a regional basis. I hate to use that on a flyway-wide basis because I think it really more influences how ducks behave in a general area.
Right.
Except for the fact they're being pushed all the time. But then the reaction in your area is clearly, to some extent, a result of the pressure in your area. I mean, we hunted every day at this place for many years. We had years when one blind killed 3,000 birds. We'll never break 1,000 again without drastic changes. We can't hunt enough to break 1,000 and still expect to hold birds. Maybe we'll get one of those magic years next year and get the migrations going with weather returning to past trends. But if you don't believe the weather's changed, honestly, I'm not getting into a global warming debate. If you don't believe our weather has been different for the last 15 years, I don't know what to tell you because you're just wrong. And pressure, if we don't reduce it, we're just going to see ducks remaining neurotic. And if you didn't get to hunt them before I'll hit spinners again, but spinners and 60-day seasons and, from north to south and all the other stuff we're doing now, the ability to access places you couldn't access easily. I mean, you say you had to be a bad mamma jamma to get into places that now you can take an Argo, an ATV, or a Go Devil and get there. We're putting more pressure on them. But the numbers are remaining okay. So it's not a conservation thing to say we need less pressure. This is a duck hunting thing. If you want quality hunting, we all need to lobby for less pressure and better habitat. Because we can't change the weather.
Nope. Hey, I'll tell you this, though. I'll tell you this, Bill. Two things real quick. One, I've been following the weather pretty heavily since what happened last year. It's kind of the same thing happened last year as far as Canada goes. Ryan Bassham told me about 3 weeks ago pertaining to ducks in Montana. He said, listen, we hadn't seen a push of ducks. The guys from Wild Nebraska Outfitters, which is right on the Wyoming-Nebraska line, we hadn't seen the push of ducks yet. And even at Prairie Rock, talking to Jake Latondras, or it wasn't Jake, it was somebody else that had been to Prairie Rock. But anyway, the ducks hadn't pushed through. Well, that tells me that if they hadn't pushed through there, they hadn't left Canada. Well, you start researching the weather as far as it goes, you're looking at highs a lot of days in the mid-40s in Canada for the last 60 days. A ton of days. Recently, highs in the 40s in the past couple of weeks. Ducks are lazy. I don't know how to get that across to people. They're not going to leave unless they have to. And there are combines running combines running everywhere in the Midwest and in Canada cutting right now with this late harvest.
We still have beans getting cut in Arkansas, and I'm sure it's that way all the way up. I mean, people following this podcast are probably on Facebook. I suggest they at least go to Forbes Biological Station and follow them, because they give a pretty regular count from that northern Illinois region. And they've been loaded up with ducks since early November, and they're still there. They're sitting on the Mississippi River. Even when it froze up, there was were huge open holes that were packed with ducks. And the hunters in that area griped there were no ducks in the area, even though you can look out of an airplane and see just scads of them everywhere, green-winged teal, mallards, gadwalls, everything. They didn't fly during shooting hours. Even when it was the dark of the moon, they didn't fly during shooting hours. That's pressure.
Exactly what the guy, Andy Solomon, I was talking to from Missouri, said yesterday. Exact same thing. Those birds are feeding at night up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to say this, because a lot of this griping, the high soapboxes in the room are the guys from Louisiana. And I want to say this.
Sure.
I got this message from a guy from Louisiana. I thought you would find this interesting. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But he was talking about his grandfather used to farm in Louisiana. But he was talking about the loss of habitat in Louisiana. A lot of, I think his grandfather farmed a couple of thousand acres. If I'm reading this, all the wintering areas that they used to provide for waterfowl down there now turned into housing developments or turned into crawfish ponds or sugarcane fields, which are of no benefit to a,
yeah,
really to a duck.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of people in South Louisiana hunt the same line every day, every single day. And then they see these people in Kansas and Oklahoma and Nebraska or wherever it may be with all these stringers and mallards. I think that you need to understand something. These people may spend 4 hours a day of windshield time to find 1 feed that they can get on. It's not like all the ducks in the world are sitting where they're not like you. They travel.
Right.
And hunt. They're not sitting in that same exact blind every day.
Right. That's exactly right.
And I think that pressure is a big deal, along with the loss of habitat and change in farming practices in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
In a year like this, with the weather the way it's been, would I expect them to probably have a lot of ducks? If this was 20 years ago, probably not.
No, this would be a bad year for them 20 years ago. And I don't care if people want to believe it or not, there were bad years in Louisiana in the 90s. There were bad years in the 80s. There were bad years in the 70s. There were bad years in the 60s. There were bad years in the 1920s. And they were written about. Now, some of those bad years we would probably consider pretty doggone good now, but that can be said for the entire flyway. Those mallards always stayed as far north as they could. Historically, if you had a dry year and a lot of cold, obviously, cold and snow, the southern Mississippi flyway was loaded up. But as there's more and more food available by farming practices, it isn't flooded corn. It's corn and soybeans and everything else. It's just laying on dry ground up there. And it's hard for us down here to envision ducks just gorging on dry ground. But you've all watched it in videos. It's not corn impound that's killing us. And we're not going to change what's killing us on the agriculture front. It's good. These practices are better for the land stability, et cetera, et cetera. Unless we get snow to cover it, we don't get those monster mega pushes like we used to get. Used to, there was a lot less food available in general, and it didn't take near as much to cover it up.
I would be the worst PR person in the world for Delta Waterfowl or Ducks Unlimited, because I would go off. I would tell these idiots, big of an idiot they really are.
Well, I think I used the word moronic once on your site, and I hate I use that word, but it was the nicest I could come up with. As I said before, heated ponds, that's not a duck thing. That's an industrial thing, and they're made to do that by law. Even holding ponds, mitigation ponds, because they build a subdivision in northern Illinois. They have to replace habitat by building these ponds, and those help hold birds up there. But if there wasn't the food, which is provided by agriculture, the water would be of limited use. Birds would have to leave, even if it didn't freeze. So farming practices won't change unless they find a better way to do it that makes farmers more money and is better for the land. Now, I'll tell you this. If we all got together and pushed to stop ethanol, that could go a long way. It would help us in a lot of ways. And some farmers will probably not like me, my saying that, but ethanol's been a bad deal for those of us who like to run boats and ATVs and chainsaws. It's been a bad deal for us as consumers because the inputs just don't match the outputs. And it's been an awful thing ecologically for our wildlife. Ducks probably hit more than anything.
I agree with that.
That quit being subsidized, and imagine how much less corn's going to be grown in the Midwest.
Bill, I started a journey on Sunday. I started out in Oxford, went to Clarksdale, down to Benoit. I don't know if you know where Benoit is. Lake Whittington.
West of
Cleveland, Mississippi. Came back across all the way to Grenada, then back to Oxford for family Christmas get together. And, you know, I saw one of my most well-respected people that I've ever duck hunted with make a comment in that thread about it not being any ducks in Mississippi. And I rode right through, kind of brings up the reason I'm saying this, I rode right through where he hunts there outside of Ruble and Mentor City. And there he used to hold a lot of birds, a ton of birds. But two things, I'm going to give an answer for what's changed in Mississippi. I'm going to give a long-term change, and I'm going to tell you about a short-term change. But the long-term change being the change in farming practices. If in the past 10 years, if you've ridden through the Mississippi Delta, I say this over and over and over. It looks like the landscape of the moon when it comes to duck season. What are ducks going to feed on? Mud? There's not much habitat at all for ducks in Mississippi anymore. What? And then on top of that, okay, well, then somebody's going to throw up and say, well, we've always had gadwalls in our cypress breaks. Well, the problem that you run into is the short-term problem when it comes to that. The past three falls have been some of the driest on record, leaving a lot of these cypress breaks, you know, dry. Well, a gadwall being a photomigrator coming through somewhere within that two-week period of Halloween, if there's no water, they're gone. They're going to the coast.
Right.
There's nothing for them to sit on. You know, most of your gadwalls are going to get here somewhere between, I'm going to say Halloween, November the 20th, 15th or 20th. And in the short term, just saying short term, yes, it can come back. But in the short term, that's what's changed with the gadwall migration and why we don't see the number of gadwalls in these cypress breaks in Mississippi. Because that's what Mississippi's known for, same way kind of Arkansas with the mallards and the green timber. You know, we have a ton of cypress breaks here. We kill a lot of gadwalls, 80%, 20% mallards.
To lend credence to that, I mean, when I first started getting to hunt every now and then at Beaver Dam, gadwalls were king. You know, Tunica, Mississippi, and it's a cypress break, and our old oxbow, gadwalls were the primary duck. I'd say, my guess, and Mike Boyd could certainly address this, probably 70% of their ducks were gadwalls. And now I'm talking to Mike, and I got to see some of it over the years, but I hadn't been there in a few. They're killing majority mallards. They don't get the gadwalls like they used to get.
I would
and
say
he's not
that
arguing
that,
as long as they get the mallards too, but it's weird not to be getting those gadwalls.
I'm telling you, in the short term, in 14, 15, and 16, now, I'm not going to sit here and say about 17, but I know in those 3 years, those falls, you can walk across a lot of these places that hadn't dried up in 50 years. And they didn't get water in them until mid-January, first week of January. That's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, because gadwalls have already passed you.
Yeah.
Or a lot of them have.
And you probably didn't grow, you know, one of the main things that they're feeding in these a lot of these cypress breaks is coontail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not going to be able to grow. Your food source is gone.
Right. At best, you'll get some smartweed.
I'm just trying to use Mississippi as an example because my hands on are here. I know what's going on right here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I
hear people in Louisiana gripe they're not even getting the gadwalls anymore, and it's the same people that gripe about corn impoundments. Well, gadwalls, I'm not going to say a gadwall never eats corn.
Great fact.
But I haven't seen it. I'm sure one has picked up a kernel at some point, but that's not their preferred food source.
You're blowing theories out of the water. Watch out, Bill.
Well, but I hear that complaint from the same people complaining about not getting a migration because of duck clubs north of them flooding corn. Just, wait a minute, you're talking about gadwalls. They don't eat corn. And if you're not getting them anymore, it's not because of corn. Just as we've talked about with mottled ducks, they're about 40% down on mottled ducks in Louisiana, and they never leave the state. So most of these theories have no basis in reality when they're looked at with even a remotely open-minded point of view.
Why, as a human being, and I know you're not a psychologist, play psychologist today. Play it. I'm going to let you sit in the chair, I lay on the couch. Why, as human beings, do we believe theories over facts? You have factual basis for what we've been talking about, but the rest are just theories. DU trucks throwing corn out on the ice. Give me a freaking break. You can't be that stupid to believe that.
Yeah, here's my psychology hat. I think as humans, especially as men with our egos, and something as important to us as hunting, and fishing's the same way, we have to find something besides ourselves to blame and, at the same time, some reason for hope it'll get better in the future. So hope for better in the future is hoping something changes to cause things to go back to the way they used to be when I was able to do well, whether that's weather patterns changing, whatever, our habitat getting better where I live. That's the down-the-road thing of hope. The other is we have to find a reason besides ourselves to blame. If it's weather, okay, well, it's an east wind, so I shouldn't catch as many fish today. It's warm, so the migration's not going to be what I'd like it to be. It's a whole lot better when I can blame someone else. The jerk that cut me off in his boat and fished that bank, there's nothing left behind him. We have enough pros that have proved that wrong, but we love to blame someone else. And if we can blame others in our sport and especially governments for it, you know, they've screwed up my lake. They have screwed up the migration. This was the one that just kills me from that FFL group. They changed the laws in the 90s. No, they didn't. That is a blatant freaking lie. And every time I see it, I will call that man a liar who's doing a disservice to our sport and to the birds that he acts like he cares about. It's a lie. these people spreading that garbage, it gets into the heads of people who just want to duck hunt. They don't want to study this stuff. They work hard. They have families. They're not biologists. So when one of these either ill-informed jerks or people who just don't care and want to lie, I don't understand the whole mindset of that, comes up with these theories and pushes them off on others, it angers me. It just angers me, because then you have people repeating this crap who just, they don't have time to try to puzzle it out. And a lot of them are younger guys. I mean, they have young families, they have jobs. They just want to hear what's wrong and how do we fix it. And they have someone telling them it's someone else's fault. And human nature tells you, I'm going to believe that. Hitler did it, man. He killed millions of people by saying this crap. It's the same thing. What's the difference? Blame somebody else.
I think it's a cultic mentality. Dude, they drink Kool-Aid and you can't tell them any different. Anyway,
absolutely.
I'm not, and that's not Bill's opinion, that's mine. So if anybody has a problem with that opinion, come after me. It's a cult. It is a cult. And if you say something to the leaders and back up with facts, it is a, what we believe, get out of here. Hey, but one more thing I will say. Josh Criswell, who I have a lot of respect for, said this. Keep your psychology hat on. No matter how bad it gets, killers are going to kill. And what I mean by that is, there's a lot of people still killing ducks, even through this tough time right now, that are putting in the work to find them on public ground.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
I think it's a wise statement.
I found about 3,000 of them sitting in some slash water on Saturday. Left them alone. Yeah, I eased up on them, pushed a few out without meaning to, and then backed out of it, and hopefully they're still there. They're in a spot. Only two groups of people could find them, and the other group isn't looking. So, but it's in a place we're going to leave them and let them day roost in there. They aren't feeding. It's some slash water that's very protected. They're just in there day roosting, and it's one of the places feeding us ducks.
But I guess that a lot of the people that you hear complaining are going to sit in old Pappy's Blind, and they're just not coming to Pappy's Blind anymore.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that gets back to the pressure thing. We have pounded them so hard from Pappy's Blind and every other spot, and we're not doing anything to take that pressure off. And I understand. I love going to the same spot over and over, where I have so many great memories. But it's getting less and less possible to do that unless you're in a spot like a real foot lake where you're surrounded by refuges and the Mississippi River and southeastern Missouri and southwest Kentucky, these just duck-holding areas with a ton of habitat and a lot of it set aside for rest. There, it's a matter of the right wind, you kill ducks if you have a good blind, just like you always did. But most of us don't have that. And we don't have enough ground to really take the pressure off to do it like a Five Oaks does or some of these really awesome, locations where they can totally control pressure, hold ducks. And I promise you the pressure controlling that for them is a bigger factor than anything they plant. But there are ducks around. You can find ducks and kill them if you have the time and go at it mentality to go find them.
All right, take your psychology hat off and put your expert hat back on. I'll ask you this. I don't think that people understand the landscape change in Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi over a 50-year span. Let's just say 50.
Mm-hmm.
It is unreal the landscape and habitat change in the long-term scheme of things, how much it has changed.
But, you know, throw Missouri and Tennessee into the mix.
Yeah, well, Missouri and Tennessee also.
Especially southern Missouri.
Hootheel, correct.
Yeah. I mean, because it was the 90s before we thought about the Bootheel being, you know, a destination place for waterfowl.
I'm sure it used to be nothing but, well, you look at a lot of the Bootheel, it's nothing but just old gumbo. And
yeah.
I'm sure it used to be nothing. And usually, most gumbo ground is used to be covered in oak trees at some point. Hardwoods.
But, you know, even if you go to the early to mid-90s, you can talk to Keith Allen or Christian Curtis or anyone from that area. The only people hunting up there were local guys. Now I have friends from Paris, Tennessee, with leases in the Bootheel of Missouri. It's a big change. And that's without even talking about what you're hinting at, which we've seen all over the southern Mississippi flyway of turning river bottom hardwoods into ag ground for soybeans. That what obviously drove a lot of that.
Well, I encourage people, because I was lucky enough to have a friend that worked for the ASCS office, and he would, back when I really, you know, you go through that stage in duck hunting, you want to learn the history, and you want to learn why this, why that, why the ducks go here. Well, you know, we were talking about it one day, and he said, listen, you really need to come by my office and look at some of these old maps, these satellite photos that I have of particular areas that you want to know about. And it's amazing what those places look like in the 50s versus today.
Mm-hmm.
Why ducks will go to a 100-foot diameter? Well, you know what? That was the opening in the trees where they could see the water where they came down into it. And now it's a rice field.
Whether that was the low spot or the high spot or the, you know, historically there was something about it.
Yeah. It's just amazing the landscape change. You're talking about even shorter term, like you were talking about, Bill, in the 90s, they dredged the Yazoo River as far as what affected me personally. And everything started draining really well in the Mississippi Delta. And then you combine that with Roundup coming on the scene and every ditch bank in the world cleared off and no more natural vegetation for ducks.
Right.
Where these ditch backed into natural vegetation for food for ducks.
The changes have been brutal in many places. And what hasn't gotten, you know, if it hasn't gotten worse, I'm trying to figure out how to say it, you know, by having so many more places now flooded up for ducks, in some ways that's great. It's habitat, at least in the spring, for the return migration, let them feed up on invertebrates. But when you have people pounding on them in those places, they're really not rest areas. They're not habitat if they're being hunted all the time. You know, the ducks are never, except at night, getting use out of them. So it's not like we've replaced good habitat with good habitat. We've replaced good habitat with really nothing.
And that's the point I try to get across to people that say, oh, man, oh, God, there's refuges, 9 million of them up and down the flyway now. Well, there used to be 9 million acres of just natural habitat that ducks used.
What do people think it looked like if you could look at an aerial map of the Mississippi flyway from 1920? It was nothing but refuge. And in a year where there was a lot of water and very little cold weather in winter, the ducks didn't go far south. And that's a fact. And anyone who wants to say otherwise is just wrong. Now, there were so many ducks before the Dust Bowl days that, yes, even in a bad year, it was a lot more than we have now, and there was no pressure compared to now. So you got decent movement and all, but your total duck numbers didn't migrate. The weather migrators didn't push when they didn't need to. And there was plenty of places for them to stay. I believe we in the, especially in the 60s and 70s, somewhat in the 50s, but then big time in the 60s and 70s, as we raked our bottom lands of hardwoods and did everything we could to stop holding water in our bottoms and just planted fields and then tilled them as soon as they were harvested, we created an atmosphere that unnaturally forced migration to some extent.
I fully agree.
It took nothing hardly compared to today and compared to what it would have historically to push ducks when they had dirt and river channels for habitat. You know, anything we had in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in general was put there by hunters. And if you read Buckingham, you even get back in the 30s and 40s, him talking about that. You know, all the only habitat left right then was provided by duck clubs. So we created an artificial thing. A lot of these guys that are lamenting what they lost was truly a man-changed migration pattern, because we made it where there was an empty plate all the way up and down.
I think that is a great stopping point. I think that's a great fact to end on, because it is a fact. Well, we did not plan on that today, but I don't think you can get any better podcast episode than what you just heard. And I am very honored and privileged to have somebody like Bill that comes on here and tells it like it is when it pertains to the migration.
I appreciate the opportunity and appreciate, you know, going back and forth with people on Duck South, and welcome any interaction about these subjects. And you can also, you know, if you don't mind me plugging Vanishing Paradise, you can also catch up to me on that board. And always happy to talk about it. We can have conversations and even disagree.
Before I let you go, Tony's Tattoos there in South Haven, Mississippi is a guy that I went to high school with. He has the best tattoo shop. You're going to get that neck tattoo.
I'll give him a shout. Might be a New Year's deal, though.
Like I said, just get OG in big letters and then straight up killer in cursive across. That's the way I do it.
That's beautiful. You, Rocky, and everybody else, y'all have a Merry Christmas.
All right, Bill, thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.